Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Spin Cycle podcast. I'm your host, Kiara McKinney, and we have more pop music to talk about. I feel like this has become a pop music podcast, but eventually I am going to talk about Real Housewives of Salt Lake City this season and some other stuff that's been sticking out to me lately. It's just been like a crazy music year 2025 has, and I think that's what we needed as a society. So I'm just reveling in it a little bit. This is kind of like a follow-up to my last episode about Doja Cat's V, which I ultimately liked, but thought it was a little bit too safe now that Taylor Swift's The Life of a Showgirl has come out. I feel like Doja Cat's album was maybe a little better. I did last week. And like, I do want to talk about kind of the connective tissue here, that both of these albums are like limiting in a way where it's like they boxed themselves into an aesthetic and they wrote an album based on an aesthetic and it didn't really push any boundaries or provide anything new or innovative and didn't really, in my opinion, like move the pop culture needle. I think both albums have songs on them that will stand the test of time, but ultimately it feels like the mood board has become the music. So let's talk about the kind of like frame of The Life of a Showgirl. She framed it as her like post-Eras Tour statement, marketed kind of as this like glittery gel pen spectacle. The visuals feature a lot of Vegas glam and feathers and showbiz, the whole thing, which I've talked a little bit on this podcast about how that's been done a lot this year, from the Gia Coppola, Pamela Anderson movie, The Last Showgirl, to Miley's Something Beautiful album that was released earlier this year. It's definitely a theme. But what's weird is that like the visuals, in my opinion, like directly contradict. The lyrics talk a lot about domestic ideals and trad wife undertones. I don't know. It's a little bit confusing to me, and I'll get into all the nitty gritty as to why. We'll talk about some of the microaggressions that some people of different groups have pointed out and the kind of lukewarm and or maybe a more accurate way to say it is polarizing response to the release. So first I want to talk about Wishlist, because sonically I like the song. It feels good on the ears, but the lyrics, it's a little us versus them. It's a little bit like this life is better than that life. And like, yes, I am speaking to this like from the perspective of a child-free person. The first verse, especially, she talks about like there's this they, right? There's this they. And she's talking, they want that yacht life under chopper blades. They want those bright lights and Balenci shades and a fat ass with a baby face. They want it all. They want all that complex female character. They want that critical smash Palme d'Or and an Oscar on their bathroom floor. They want it all. I actually had a friend who I really appreciated her like saying this. She's like, well, what's the difference between like wanting to get married and wanting to have kids and like the trad wife aesthetic? And to me, it's this, it's exactly what I just pointed out. It's the they, it's the like, when she gets into, I just want you, have a couple kids, got the whole block looking like you. We tell the world to leave us the fuck alone and they do. Got me dreaming about a driveway with a basketball hoop. So again, it's very much like us versus them. It's like, it's almost like she's talking about people in Hollywood and she's like, everybody in Hollywood is materialistic except me. I just want domestic bliss. And so that's what is really like reading as trad wifey and conservative and like all of those things. It's not just the mention of kids or anything like that. It's the like, and then in verse two, she says they want that freedom living off the grid. They want those three dogs that they call their kids and that good surf. No hypocrites. They want it all. They want a contract with Real Madrid. They want that spring break that was fucking lit. They want that video taken off the internet. They want it all. And again, it's this us versus them thing. And as somebody who I do want freedom and travel, and I do have three cats that I call my kids, and she also has three cats, but whatever. Like, it just is a little bit trad wifey. Like, it just, it is. It's trad wife propaganda. And it, like, it frames it as, like, this is, it's kind of like moral purity, right? It's kind of like, we know that our love is real because we don't want anything but each other and to multiply ourselves. And it's like, that's actually like a super fucking common thing. That's why, what are you talking about? I don't know. That one just like bummed me out because I was like, man, I like the way this sounds, but like, I hate the message. I hate the central thing. I don't know. It's just a lot. And then I also want to talk about some of the like rumored digs that she took. I think the Charlie XCX one is pretty cut and dry. It's very obvious. And I keep seeing these like headlines that are like, is it actually about Kim Kardashian? And no, it's not. That's ridiculous. It's obviously about Charlie XCX. And I am of the mind that Margaret Qualley is the mole. Margaret Qualley, if you don't know, she's an actress. She was in The Substance and she's married to Jack Antonoff, longtime Taylor Swift collaborator. He did not produce this album, and that's also kind of suspicious. But he's also working on a movie with Charlie XCX. They're collaborating on producing the music for a movie, or he's doing the score and she's producing it. So that one was pretty obvious. I thought it was really odd for several reasons, because number one, Sympathy is a Knife is absolutely not a track. In fact, it's very like introspective and vulnerable and is really almost complimentary of Taylor. She says repeatedly, I couldn't even be her if I tried. There's nothing about that song that indicates that she dislikes Taylor. It's the way she feels pitted against her, compared to her, etc. And it felt like the lyrics of Taylor's song directly mirrored Sympathy is a Knife, and especially the parts about George, where Charlie says, George says, I'm just paranoid. And then Taylor says something about, like, your boyfriend must be tired of hearing about me. And a lot of people have also pointed out that it's kind of like a homophobic song. The whole objective is her romanticizing the fact that Charlie doesn't like her and kind of framing it as though, if I'm living rent free in your head, that's actually romantic. So you have a crush on me, haha. And it's kind of like, a lot of people are pointing to the movie Mean Girls. If you've seen Mean Girls, I hope you have. If you're listening to this podcast and you haven't seen Mean Girls, like, turn me off and go turn Rachel McAdams on. But the whole thing is that, like, you know, that point where Katie says, like, it's not my fault that you're in love with me or something. And Damien and Janice are like pissed because that's exactly what Regina had like used on Janice. So it's like it's literally a mean girl trope. So the fact that like she thought that she was doing something with this song, I'm just so confused. I'm so confused by how she took Sympathy as a Knife as a diss track. And I'm so confused how she thought that this was a cool or cute idea. Taylor, do you think that Maddie Healy went around saying like, yeah, I ghosted her, and then they high-fived? Like, it probably was more like, yeah, we're over, and then Charlie happened to be happy about it and high-fived him. But even if that even happened, but it's just, I don't think that the punishment matched the crime here at all. And then same thing with the Kayla Nicole. She took a couple digs at Kayla and or Black women and women in general. Obelite is like the most obvious dig because she talks kind of about herself as Obelite and about Kayla as though she's Onyx. So there's like that obvious kind of like skin color connection. Not that Taylor deliberately did that. Not that she necessarily was like, I'm going to compare myself to white, and I'm going to compare his Black ex to Black. Like, I don't necessarily think that was her thought process, but I also think that the interpretation, that interpretation of it just like didn't cross her mind. And that is equally problematic. I think the whole thing was just very like regressive. I think if I could give it one word, it would be that regressive. And it's kind of like framed as romance or rebellion, but it's not. It's neither of those things. And she's incapable of writing good music about Travis, unfortunately. And it also just shows her insecurity about her vanilliness compared to Travis's previous proclivity to dating Black women. Somebody else on the internet pointed out that a lot of her exes have gone on to date Black women too. And I thought that was really interesting. So I experienced the exact reverse of what she's experiencing. And not to make this about me, but mine's worse. And like, whatever. Marry somebody who doesn't have a type. That's my personal anecdote here, because all of my husband's exes look different, and that's a good thing. Anyway, it just like proves that like the fact that she is not his typical type is like really in her head, and she's doing a lot of projecting on this album. To me, this album is like a worse version of Lover, but it's like the antithesis, the like evil twin to Reputation, where Reputation was very like defiant. This is so like palatable and like accommodating and conservative. And I don't mean conservative politically, I mean conservative as in like there was little risk, very risk averse, which is ironic because with how safe it was, she still managed to make microaggressions. So it's like, did a single Black person listen to this before you put it out? That's my question. Did one single Black person listen to this? But I want to bring it back to Doja Cat's album a little bit, because one of the criticisms I gave about Doja's album was that it lacked emotion. And ironically, I feel the same way about Taylor's, which is weird because usually Taylor's dripping in emotion and sometimes the substance gets lost in all the feelings. But here, it's all like ideas without feeling. And I think that's similar to how I'm digesting Doja's album. Neither album is like a 0 out of 10 or like whatever, but like neither of them are my favorites of either artist, and certainly not my favorite album released this year when there's a lot of competitive work being put out. It's just both of these are limiting in terms of depth, which is a real bummer. And like when you contextualize this within the broader pop landscape, you've got Sabrina, who is like really subverting like misogynistic tropes and like kind of flipping them on their head to make a very smart cultural critique. And you have Charlie XCX, who is like really making club music mainstream. And she's also an incredible performer, which like I cannot imagine. Like she's the only person who goes up there on stage by herself. She doesn't have dancers. She doesn't have a band. She doesn't have a DJ. It's her and a microphone up there. And that's her act. And it draws crowds and it's interesting and it's exciting. And she like implements a lot of visuals. And like, I am just really impressed by her. Then we have Chapel Roan, who brings theatrics to her really strong vocal ability. And I mean, I'm going to her show this Saturday. I am so fucking excited to see her live. They're succeeding in this ecosystem where Taylor and Doja are faltering. They're not taking enough risk and they're not self-aware enough. I think self-awareness is really key to this moment in pop. And they just don't possess it in the same way some of the other girls do. So like I said at the beginning, both of these albums are kind of like mood boards that failed to come to life. Taylor's conservatism and Doja's detachment are just two sides of the same coin, which is a lack of vulnerability. Both albums are really obsessed with control. For Doja, it's the cohesiveness of it. And for Taylor, I think it's a control of the narrative. but that limits the connection the audience can have to the music and to the artist. So it's just, it's lacking perspective. It's all very built around personas. They're not saying anything new. In other news, I've been streaming Somber, and guys, I love that little kid. He's 20 years old. I love it. It's really good. If you haven't listened to Somber and you like a 1975 sound or like a kind of like alternative sound, I highly recommend. All right, guys, that's all I've got for you today. Thanks for tuning in. Let me know what you thought about The Life of a Showgirl, and let me know if any of what I just said made you feel differently, or if you want to challenge my beliefs. Tune back in next week. I'll see you back here. Love you. Bye.